This is Phantom Electric Ghost, and we're live on the air with Deborah Bowers, and you're a seasoned marketing guru, and we're going to talk to you for the first time here live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch for the Phantom Electric Ghost podcast. We also have your dealswithheels.com link, which is going to be active when we're fully published. People will be able to click through on that. So again, welcome to the Phantom Electric Ghost podcast. How are you doing tonight?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Well, I let people know we are also a featured podcast on the Newsly Network. You might see that icon up there. And as a featured podcast, if you want to check that out on Newsly, that's an audio-only platform. You can use coupon code GHOST, and we'll be on there later tonight with an audio version. And so today, we're going to talk about basically creating a mindset for success. And we're going to talk about like your whole story. And one of the first things we ever ask anybody is a couple questions, like what motivates you and why do you do what you do?
You know, I spent a long time raising kids and making other people's dreams and businesses big and come true. And I really sacrificed a lot to do that. I have five kids that I raised. And so now they're all grown and it's Deborah time. And I love what I do. I'm finally making decisions that only I want to do. Although my dogs, they influence that a little bit too. But I'm doing what I love for really the first time in a really long time. I think it's easy for everyone, but especially women. As a mom, you sacrifice everything for your kids, right? You're never the priority. And you get used to that. And I think women overall kind of are late bloomers when it comes to their professional careers. And it certainly has been true for me. But that really, just being able to reach back into my marketing roots and do the things that I love so much and helping the causes that I'm passionate about, it really, it feels fantastic to be able to do it. I feel more in my own skin than I have in a couple of decades, probably. So I don't really have to be motivated because I love what I do.
That's really a good place to be, to have that kind of self-actualization and be, you know, in the moments and doing the thing that you like to do the most. Because a lot of people, like you said, parents and women primarily, they you know, self-sacrificing and being people pleasers or, you know, child pleasers, you have to, that responsibility gets laid on, you know, typically the mother is doing most of that work, even though, you know, the father's there, he's doing something else. but what I want to, so were you into marketing before you had kids and you got back to it? Is that the story?
I was, and during my kids, so I have a blended family. Two of the five children are my biological kids. And when they were, before I had them and while they were young, I was really in corporate America and marketing. And I spent a long time there and then got divorced, got remarried. And my husband had two small children. They were like 5 and 2. And we got married. And so we had custody of his kids too. So immediately 4 kids under the age of 7.
Not quite a Brady Bunch, but big.
it's almost a basketball team. Let's face it. Right. Yeah. So it was challenging and we couldn't both work 50 hours a week. Not if you want your kids to grow up to be productive adults and not be criminals or, I mean, let's face it, you got 4 or 5, you're playing percentages that they'll even all graduate high school. It's just the way it kind of is. And so I did other things while they were little. And then I always did marketing consulting on the side. I never really got all the way rid of it. And then I spent some time as a CEO of a construction company and ran a mortgage company for a while, which I hated that construction job. It's a really good example of just because you can do something well doesn't mean you should be doing it. Mm-hmm. And I did that for a long time. And then I got divorced. we split during the shutdown during COVID, and I got back into marketing and realized, God, wow, I feel so much better. It was an amazing feeling to get back into it. And then I started my advertising agency in 2022. And then last September, we launched the podcast Deals with Heels. And so we have one season under our belt and we are about to start recording season two. So we're really excited about that. And honestly, it doesn't even feel like work.
Yeah.
I'm really just loving it. And I'm an incredibly competitive person. I was an athlete growing up. And so I want all my clients' marketing campaigns to work. And I like to really get in and target all of their campaigns towards the right audience. And I'm kind of nerdy about it, but I really enjoy it a lot. And I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to do it again.
So how do you find podcasting intersects with your business? Is it something that you had expected to do, or something that you found and then enjoy or see the benefits of it for your business?
Well, I have a communications degree and I've done a fair amount of public speaking when I was younger. And I met Christina, my co-host. She's almost 20 years younger than me, but we had both been on a very similar spiritual healing journey. And we were the exact right mindset at the same time. And we just really clicked as friends. It was amazing. We have great chemistry. We had known each other about 4 months when we started our podcast. Mm-hmm. And it really is a testament to how when you find common mindset, it's really important to take advantage of it, that the universe is sending you that person for a reason. So get in and make it happen. And I had considered and thought about doing a marketing podcast or some kind of a podcast. I've always been really passionate about women's issues. And I don't know what possessed me. One day I just asked her if she wanted to start a podcast with me. And unbeknownst to me, it was like her lifelong dream to do. And just when things are right, they're so right. When things are going good, when you're on the right path, you can tell. And there's a big difference. The people that enter your life are the people that are there to work with you, that are meant to be there. Christina and I were that for each other, and we have great chemistry on the show. We've known each other a year now. So, but I feel like I've known her such a long time. And so really grateful, but that is how we started it. And then we bonded over high heels. We met each other out networking for each of our business. She owns the Declutter Queen. She's a chronic disorganization specialist. She keeps me in line with my creativity and my accountability to self-care. And so we met and just really hit it off, and we both were wearing heels. And so we bonded over that, and we did something that we've carried over into all of the episodes, which is when we would do something good that we were proud of. For me, it was typically closing business because I'm so competitive, but sometimes it would be just like I got through something that I needed to get through. And so we would send each other a photograph of our foot and the heel we were wearing when we did it. And it was a really empowering thing. And so we carried that in, and we encourage other women to send us the pictures of their heels, and we don't discriminate against non-high heels. We'll take anything. We've had combat boots and tennis shoes, and they tell us something that they're doing, and then we feature one of them as Queen of the Week on every episode of the podcast. And so the full title is Deals with Heels, Where Female Entrepreneurs Thrive. We do a lot of talking about marketing and sales when we're on there. So it's really directly ties into what I do every day for my business.
It's interesting how podcasting has helped a lot of businesses. You know, I talked to a lot of, this podcast was initially developed to talk to like creative people. It initially started talking to musicians and artists and filmmakers, and people like that. But then I found there was a synergy with entrepreneurs, because entrepreneurs are just as creative as like a photographer or artist, or maybe
they definitely are.
They're doing the same thing. It's the same kind of energy. And then, you know, being a Buddhist, I believe in like this law of attraction. So a lot of times you find these opportunities because you're like, you open up your mindset, that you're open to like the muse. You're open to what the universe puts in front of you. And sometimes you're in the, on the right frequency, being a musician, like you're in harmony, you're in dissonance.
Yes.
Or discordance, right? Like when you meet somebody that's on the same frequency, it's like the harmony of a great song. Everything's in perfect pitch. It's all coming together, right? So I talk in musical terms, but I find that's universal because people can understand what I say. If I say harmony, you know what that means usually. And if you say discordance or dissonance, you might say, well, yeah, that's something that's like out of tune. That's like, so you're in tune with people, you're out of tune. Sometimes it happens like in a relationship. Sometimes there can be some dissonance. Doesn't mean that you can't work through it, but you know, everything's always perfect.
You're exactly right. Frequency is a really big deal. And if you are, you know, they talk about how you are the five people that you hang out with. And if you are hanging out with five people that are vibrating at a lower frequency than you are not going to feel fulfilled when you're around them. You're always going to be having that. I feel like I need to do this. I feel like I need to do that. You're never going to have that fulfilling thing. And I am in this, I don't know anyone that has been through that whole kind of growing process where you're raising your frequency to where it needs to be. And when you do that, you shed people.
Yeah, shed people.
Right.
Yeah, they're not vibing with you anymore. You're not picking up the vibe.
So, and they don't like you anymore either. That's part of it, right? You know, they don't like you anymore. You don't do the same things that you used to, and you don't. And so there's a certain amount of isolation involved before you find all of your people. And I'm in that spot, honestly. I have shed so many things and so many people and so many groups and so many
there's like point in time people. There's sometimes there are people that are point in time people. And I was like, what does that mean? There are people like they, when you were 25, that you were in the same frequency, but by the time you're 35 or 45, you're not. But then they want you to still be the person they knew when they were 25 or 35 and you're 45. They're not, it's like you move on. Like some people don't move on. They stay where they are or they stay in a zone. And then like they don't get it. If you have a growth mindset and you're growing and you're actually challenging that looking glass self and you're actually looking at what you can improve and actually making steps. And then they're the kind of person where like they feel comfortable and codependence, and they can be codependent with themselves, right?
They will sabotage you, not intentionally even. They're clinging to what's comfortable for them, and they miss that whole relationship. And so it's understandable, but they will sabotage your success if you're not careful. And it's unfortunate, but no one wants change. People are uncomfortable with change, and it's important to have growth mindset. And I think that people get really stuck in scarcity mindset and they block all their money and they focus and worry. And I understand, I come from a long line of worriers, and my mom worried all the time. And the day I stopped worrying about how I was going to pay my bills, and I just did the work and assumed the money's going to be there. Don't worry about it. Just do it. And that's when I didn't have to worry about money anymore.
That's a hard thing for people to come to, because it's like counterintuitive to some people. They say, well, I'm not being responsible if I don't have some like doubt, you know, because they go, how can you be so arrogant to think that you can do it? But it's not arrogance. Like people who are directed, It's like, kind of like a musician. If I kind of tell people, like, if I'm a musician, am I playing for 20 years and I'm playing a song, like I know all the keys, I can hear it. Somebody doesn't have to tell me what key I'm in, right? I can kind of know what key I'm in. If I have to go ask, why am I doing that? Like, you're not trusting yourself. Like there's some things that are like muscle memory. why are you doubting yourself and actually saying something that's actually not necessary, right? So you're actually doubting what your capability is, and you don't need to do that.
That's exactly right. And scarcity mindset comes in a lot of different ways, but it worrying about it, it's not that you can just sit on your butt and say, well, everything's going to be fine. I don't have to do anything. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about growth mindset, which is if I work hard enough, it will happen. And the difference between the scarcity is it doesn't matter what I do, I'm never going to have enough. And worrying about it constantly, if you
like imposter syndrome. If you have that imposter syndrome, where you don't feel that you're good enough or you're never going to make it, well, then those things aren't going to happen. And then when people say, well, how come they can be so confident, right? Like you get the, you know, the sales pitch guy that's always hitting $1 million round table, going on the trips, getting to come. It's like, how are they doing that? How are they doing that? My dad was a sales manager for Prudential. He was always hitting his goals and doing the trips. And it's like, it's a mindset. You know, like the sales guys, either like you got that mindset or you don't.
You're exactly right. And it, I think people can get in the trap of, well, how's he stay so positive? How's he stay positive mindset all the time? And he doesn't. Positive mindset is impossible to sustain. No one's positive all the time. And you can get in the trap of, well, I'm just not able to be positive like that all the time. And really what you want is that entrepreneurial mindset so that, oh, I'm going this way. And if that happens, okay, that didn't work. Now I'm going to go this way. And they don't get bogged down in mistakes and obstacles and challenges. They roll with the punches. And yeah, I try always to maintain that so that no matter what happens, whether I'm feeling positive or I do have a really positive outlook on life. Myself, I'm rarely am just in a negative Debbie Downer kind of thing, but I no one's positive all the time. Everybody has a bad day.
Waves, right? Like life is a wave. Sometimes you're on the up wave, sometimes you're on the down wave. The way I look at it is like musicians will say, there's no bad note, there's an opportunity. If you're playing live and you hit the so-called bad note, if you're with a group of musicians that kind of know what to do, you will never, the audience will never perceive that they actually hit the bad note, because they're not going to go look at everybody and go act like they hit the bad note, right? They're going to actually take that note and take the song in a different direction. And so what you hear is a song version of the song you've never heard before, because it's actually, they're kind of correcting in real time. It's kind of like knowing what your audience and kind of reading the room. Like you have these, a lot of times you have those ability to pick up the vibe. You can pick up the vibe of a person, you can read the room, or you could stay on your plan, or you could actually look at what's happening right now. If you stay on your plan and you're giving a speech and you're losing the room, maybe reading that that planned speech isn't the right thing to do at that moment. Maybe you should actually read the room and adjust to what's going on right now.
Well, you definitely... that is just, you have to do that. That's critical. And it reminds me of, I don't know if you watch sports, but you know, when you're watching a game and the coach just keeps running the same play, that same screenplay, and they nail them every time. And you're like, what the heck? Why can't they run a different play? They get so tunnel visioned into their game plan that they can't get out of it. They can't change from it. This is what we're going to do. We're sticking to it. Okay. But you know, you've done all, it's not working. And my alma mater, I went to Oklahoma State, and the coach there, he would do that. And I'm just like, you've got to be able to adjust. You got to go in at halftime and make adjustments, and you can't keep running that same game plan. But I think people get that in their mind. This is what I'm going to do. This is my plan, my business plan. And when it comes out in the real world and they start implementing it, and it doesn't work exactly that way, and it's not as easy to do it this way, and it's hard for them to be flexible. And you're talking about live music, that creativity and flexibility of musicians just to go, well, there he goes. Here we go on that key now. And everybody just kind of follows and joins in because that's what you do. You improvise and roll with the punches and make that happen. It's a great analogy to be able to, you know, play in that group and everybody get along and everybody head towards the same goal. And instead of being a jerk and being like, well, you're playing the wrong notes, everybody just jumps on board to that train and goes like, that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's versus like the start and stop and it looks like a big disaster versus the band that's seamless and plays it off and you don't even know they made a mistake.
Right, the perfect mindset. That's the perfect mindset for anything in life. If something hits you and it knocks you off key onto something else and you weren't expecting it, the musicians aren't expecting you to hit the wrong note and they don't know you're going to do that. And to be able to say, okay, I wasn't expecting that. And so now what am I going to do? And be able to adjust. That is, I think, really the key to life, not just business and being in a band, but I told all of my kids this. Everyone has BS in their life. No one is immune from it. We all have troubles. It comes. And if you're not having troubles and life is good, then I can guarantee you that it will change. And if life is bad, then I can guarantee you it'll be good again, because that's just the way life works. And so I tell my kids, everybody has it. How you deal with it determines your character. Who are you going to be? Are you going to be Freddie freak out when it happens? Are you going to be stuck and not know what to do? Or are you going to work through it and hopefully have something positive come out of it? There's a silver lining in almost every tragedy, I think. I lived one in May of 2017. There were a bunch of big fires in Northwest Oklahoma. It's dry up there. We're in fire season kind of then right now. And there were a bunch of big fires. And there was one in my little small town I grew up in, and my mom lived there, and it got really close and they were evacuating. Oh, wow. And she, you know, their little dog at 79 driving south to get away from the fire. And people lost their livelihoods. They lost their homes. We lost our homestead that my great grandparents built in 1901. No one lived there, but it burned down. I know someone that they were moving cattle, he and his wife, and it was really smoky. They were trying to save them and he accidentally hit her with the vehicle and she died. Just a horrible tragedy. Half the town got pneumonia, including my mother, which is how we diagnosed her lung cancer, stage 3B, a hair's breadth away from stage 4 and not curable. It's a horrible tragedy for every single person involved in that storm, but not for my family. For my family, it let me have my mom 4 extra years that I wasn't going to have. And so there's such a silver lining. Every time I see a tragedy now, I see somewhere in there.
There's a lesson learned, or there's an opportunity, like you say.
Blessing.
Yeah, if you look at a lot of things in life, people want it to be on the happy path. Like, well, I'm a software designer, but we find in, inventing things and doing, being creative, like in the software world, is the happy accident. And inventors and scientists run into this all the time. The thing that's
the happy accident.
Yeah. The happy accident is the thing that comes that was unexpected. You couldn't plan for, but if you listen to it and don't try to shove it down, a lot of times it gives you an opportunity that you're going to end up, it's a blessing. It's kind of what you're talking about. The thing happens and it's this unexpected situation that you couldn't have accounted for. And if you actually accept it and kind of go with it, like, you know, the muse gave you something, the universe gave you something, and you got to be smart enough to actually take it instead of rejecting it. And then you'll find that you can turn around everything. Like, and so the idea, like, well, I'm wondering, like if you think about marketing campaigns and sales, is fraught with a lot of potential ups and downs. But if you look at everything that maybe doesn't go exactly as planned, or things that you didn't anticipate, and you have these lessons learned, you will grow from that and be able to navigate. because you won't get triggered by the things that freak you out.
That's true. And I do sales coaching, and I will tell you that salespeople get up in their own mind, and they will get in a slump, and then it's, I can't get past it. Scarcity mindset. That's a good example of scarcity mindset of everybody's saying, no, there's something wrong. And they get out of the, I need to build value. They get out of the whole sales vibe. And if they get over on that funky side, then you got to fix it quick, because it can spread through a whole sales team. But it's so important to be able to do that. And salespeople get a lot of rejection. They get told no a lot. And it's easy to get in that negative mindset and scarcity mindset from it and lose motivation from it. And no one's motivated every day. That's a fallacy. When people are like, I don't know how they stay motivated. They're not motivated every day. No one's motivated every day. Discipline wins the day. Getting up and doing what you don't want to do.
Showing up.
Yep. Getting up, and I don't feel like doing that today, but I got to do it today. And being able to overcome your mental mindset of, I really want to sleep in. I don't want to get up and do kickboxing. I don't want to get up and go to this meeting. I'm going to postpone it. And having discipline to do that, and being in the mindset that you can have discipline to do, it's really important and not easy. I can't live there the whole time. It's so weird how just one little thing can get you off your game, and then you can't get it back. And I lost my discipline, and now it's gone. And it's really hard.
Your train
sometimes.
Of thought. Like, it's like your train of thought. If they're like, you're in a groove with a band, and somehow your mind's not there or your heart's not in it, and then you get out of sync. Like you can be in a band, and like, you can have like whatever the issue is. It could be mental, physical, whatever, but you get out of sync, and they're like, what happened? Cause like, normally you're in this unit, and you know, you can see it in sports teams when somehow all the plays are going wrong. And normally that team is like a well-oiled machine and everything goes right. But there's some days, like if you're not there, if you're somewhere else, you're not present, then things will start to fall apart.
Yeah, as somebody that has some ADHD and creative mind, you know, you can be in the middle of something and this whole other creative cog is going, and now that's really interesting, and lose your train of thought. Now I want, yeah, that's a really big deal. But as a creative person, you also don't want to lose those ideas that come. And one of my sons is a pure creative, and such a laid back and creative kid that I kind of worried that he would be indigent when he grew up. I'm so happy he found his responsibility. But there's not a good place for them in society. They're not, a pure creative person is invaluable to have, because when you need them, you really need them. But they're not good at paperwork, and they don't show up on time, and they can't pay attention part of the time. And so they don't function well amongst the busy work we've given us all for society. And so as a result, they're really undervalued. I'm blessed. I'm creative, but I'm analytical. I really am a nerd. I hide it very well, but so I can go back and forth, but a pure creative, they just exist in a different space. And it's a form of intelligence that isn't measured with today's society. It's not appreciated. And I think a lot of people hire a creative person and then tell them what to do, which is the opposite of what you're supposed to do. You hire a creative person and then you listen. And I mean, in a brainstorming session or a music session, when you get that one just crazy person that says crazy ideas or plays crazy riffs, or it's such a great influence on the group as a whole. And I love the crazy ideas, because it's a lot easier to dial one back than it is to think of them, if, you know, to get this wimpy idea and make it into something fantastic. So much easier to take the crazy idea and pull them back off the cliff. Yeah.
It's kind of the out of the box thinking, because like, our society is built to do industrial, in the box, in the cubicle, but then they want what the creative has. So you get managers like, well, we want creatives, but then they put them in the box. Right.
Yeah, we want them.
Yeah, it doesn't want to be in the box. They don't want to work 9 to 5. They more want to be like a consultant. They want to be able to do their magic when it comes, right? And you want it to be measurable on your scale. And you don't have the right metrics to actually measure that. And then you say, well, they're not performing. Well, it's and like you're not measuring them right. You don't have the right tool to measure what they can do.
Right. And so, you don't understand the way creativity works. And so you just know you can't do it. But okay, if you can't do it, then it must be pretty difficult, huh? Well, they just do it right because that's what they do. They don't crunch numbers, you crunch numbers. But it's amazing. And I really have embraced my creativity as I've gotten older. In my younger career, I was a big math nerd. And so my creativity really came out in creative problem solving and creative ideas and creative campaign planning. But actual making advertising or painting or any of that, I really didn't start doing that until 2020. Wow. And I spent a long time. One of the most frustrating things of a marketing person's career, especially it definitely was mine, was explaining to a graphic designer what I wanted my ad to look like. And then re-explaining it again and explaining why the phone number needed to be on, because it just the commercialism of it. And they've done such a great job with software. All of the Adobe products are available in Express, mm-hmm. and there's thousands of stock photography and pre-made digital elements. And I have not used a graphic designer since 2020. And it's so empowering to be, because I know what looks good. I know what works.
You know what you want.
Yeah, I'm right? a great marketing person, but I could never do it myself. And now I can. And it is a very empowering feeling. So if anyone out there thinks that they can't because they tried Adobe Illustrator or PageMaker, check out Adobe Express because it is fantastic. And I make everything on it, and it has been a really empowering. It's helped me expand my creativity. You talk about, you know, saying things. I really believe when you brainstorm and you talk about your ideas that it's out in the ether. Yeah. So now it's out there. Somebody else gonna get that. If you put it out there, you got to act on it now. Don't just talk about it and think about it. And you hear a lot of people say, man, I thought about that a long time ago. And now look, somebody made it and they're making, right? So that I really believe that that's true. And I think in a creative environment, like when I'm really campaign planning and I've got that client that's with me and we're getting into, I'm understanding their business even more. I've got my digital team involved. I think all of that being up in the air just gets us all flowing.
It's the difference with it. You got the artist that's in their loft. You got all these paintings they never throw in the gallery because they say it's not ready. Or the musician's got 100 demos. And a really core song of their career, they refuse to put out because they think people won't like it. And a lot of what's going on today is like, we have the social media, we have the net. So like you can go and put a track out, you can put a piece of art out and it could get responded to somewhere in the world. And you can have an audience in Switzerland. You can have an audience in Australia. But if you never put it out, you won't know that you have that audience, right? That you have no idea. Because you're being too controlled, too restrictive of your own creativity. You're self-doubting. You've got like imposter syndrome. You don't really believe that your work is good. And so a lot of these tools now allow you, like you're saying, to, if you have that vision, you can actually express it. So you can actually show people what you're talking about. Like a lot of us musicians, there are people who are not musicians. They've got all kinds of tools. They can get to a sound. And they can't play a bass guitar, but they know how to use a DAW, a digital audio workstation, and they actually can produce a song and it could be a big hit, sell billions of copies, and they can't even play the piano or bass at all. But they had a vision of what they wanted and they were able to put it together themselves.
And I think, so I started painting. I've never had any art lessons I was way too busy taking math classes to take anything frivolous like art when I was growing up. But in 2020, I just had this great desire to paint. And I've always been an art lover. My first husband was an artist. I go to art museums. I just had never done it, never even tried, because I didn't think that I could do it. But in, you know, in the lockdown, there's a lot of stuff that everybody did that they didn't do. And so, right. And so I had this desire to paint, and I specifically wanted to paint my daughter's face. Now, right? Who thinks they could just pick up something and paint somebody's face? I've never had I can't draw a face. I can't sketch a face. I can't, but I bought all the stuff and I painted her face from a photograph. Exactly. Wow. It was, I totally found a complete hidden talent. In fact, I sold my first painting today. But I've really only painted about 15 paintings, but so, you know, those people that can do that, it makes you wonder if they tried, is there some hidden talent they don't realize that they have? They just haven't tried the right instrument, or they haven't. I think a lot of that goes back to that one, believing in yourself and self-doubt. But I also think there's a huge portion of us that are in fight or flight. Unreal, you know, irrational. They don't realize they're in it, but they're in freeze.
Yeah, they get the wolf at the door.
Freeze. Yeah. They're in freeze. And so they're scared. They're scared to move on. They're scared to publish it, but they don't realize it's fear. And instead of fight or flight, they're the deer. They're frozen and they can't move forward. And I lived my life like that in my second marriage and just stuck. Like, and after my mom passed in 2020, and it was really devastating for me. I took care of her when she was sick. We were really, really close. And it's not that it was surprising. She was 84, but it does. And everybody ends up in the same place, right? No one gets to keep their parents forever, but it was still really devastating. And so I ended up having to go to counseling, which saved me. And I'm so grateful for it. And one day I was talking to Fred, my counselor, and I was like, I just wish I would stop procrastinating. And so I was explaining to him, I don't know why I can't do it. It's a simple task. I know how to do it. I just can't seem to make myself do it. And I'm so hard on myself over it. And he would say, Deborah, you're not procrastinating. And I would say, yes, I am procrastinating. I can't get it done. He goes, no, you're in fight or flight, but you're the deer. And it's not something that you subconsciously think about, but he gave me a grounding exercise to do. It's called 5-4-3-2-1. And you can Google it. It's in there. But you go through all of your senses. So you think of, or even say out loud, five things that you can see. And then you do four things that you can hear, and you work your way all the way down, and it grounds you to the here and now where you're safe. And it snapped me out of freeze like that. And it changed my life. It changed my life, and it let me get my mindset back, right? Because I was in this, it didn't feel right. I know this is not the way I want to be, or I feel like I should be different than this. And I want to be able to post my music or apply for that job or whatever it is, start a podcast, whatever it is, but I can't move. I can't decide. I can't even make the decision to actually do it. And a ton of people aren't procrastinating. They are subconsciously in fight or flight because it's reminded them of a time that they don't even remember that they were in danger, or they were in a situation. And so your brain, your subconscious just puts you there irrationally. And yeah, it was made
trying to protect you. Your brain trying to protect you.
It is the
phantom or the wolf at the door is not the physical wolf. There's all these like manifestations of the wolf that can happen based on something that happened in your childhood, or like reinforce like these, trauma. And so you're getting triggered into that trauma, and then you're scared, and that's trying to save you.
Right. And so you're just stuck in a
safe place, you know, because everybody wants that safety. But I always mention
your brain definitely wants what's comfortable. That's why battered women and people stay in horrible situations. And that's because even if it's bad, your brain likes that comfortability. And I think a lot of times I always try, when you try something new, your heart rate gets going and you know, you're a little edgy and you're the nerves of it. But I always am like, okay, you're not anxious. You're excited. So similar. It's such a little switch. Yeah. Just a little switch.
When you first
learn
how to swim, you know, you're kind of treading water. You might drive, you feel like you're going to drown. You're riding that bike, you fall down, you scrape your knee. Right. There's something about those first things you learn, right? And when you're a kid, you're more likely to jump on that bike and keep on falling down, scraping your knee. You're more likely to jump in a pool and tread the water until you can do it. But as you get older, you get more scared of those things and you don't want to do it because you're too like comfortable in the codependence or comfortable in the knowing of what, even if it's a bad thing, you know it. It's a known bad thing is more comforting than the unknown new thing.
That's exactly right. That is exactly what it is. And a lot of people I stayed in my second marriage longer than I should have. And I was in freeze. I didn't want to be there, but I didn't know what to do. And I didn't know how I would do it. And I couldn't even get into the mindset of being able to make decisions. So that's a mindset really is everything.
Yeah. It's a hard thing to get into if you've been in a limiting belief zone. Like if you're in that limited belief zone, if you're into that codependence that's comfortable, instead of going into the unknown zone that you're scared of. Like I mentioned, one of my favorite artists, David Bowie, used to mention, like, if I'm not treading water artistically, then I'm not moving forward. Like he would go and put himself in situations where he wasn't the best person or the most capable person in the room. He'd go into a room with Luther Vandross, even knowing he could sing better than him. He'd go in a room with Stevie Ray Vaughan, who can play better guitar than him. You know, he would go to challenge himself and then go into a project where he wasn't the alpha, where he wasn't the best, right? And push himself to get into a totally different place. And it's somewhat like, when you try that new thing, you're not going to be perfect at it. You're probably not going to be that good at it, but you're going to challenge yourself. And then you're not comfortable in something that you just routine that you can phone it in. You can't phone it in if you haven't mastered it yet. Right. So you put yourself into something that you're trying to master. And it's a challenge. It's a harder thing to do.
And I think we get into that whole people pleasing thing and you just want people to be happy. And so you don't want to do something that's going to rock the boat, that's different. And then you're back people pleasing. And I was like a champion people pleaser. I was really good at it. I didn't people please myself very much. And when you set those boundaries and I made them non-negotiable. And when you do that, people think you're being mean to them. And they don't understand that you're saving your relationship with them, because if it continues without that boundary, it's going to blow up and be over, because I'm not happy with this without that boundary there. And it feels like punishment to the people around you that have been taking advantage of you not having that boundary, because you take something away from them that you were doing for them, and they feel really uneasy and fearful of what's going to happen to me if you change and get better. And now you're different than me. And I'm scared and I'm nervous that you're not going to be the same and not going to be there for me. We so get involved in all of those things. And it's hard to let it go. It's really hard to have that boundary, but it's important that you're able to do that. If not, then you're all over the place and you can't focus on your own success goals. So being in that mindset of this is just the way, this is what I'm doing, and it's not being hurtful to anybody else. And I'm sorry if you don't like it, but this is my way. This is how I am. And no matter what you do, this is who I am. I really strive really hard for that. It's not easy, but to not be triggered when somebody, but no matter what you do, I'm going to be like this, no matter what that is. And once you make that transition, it's comforting to know someone like that, because they're always who they are. And no matter what happens around them, they stay. And I listened to a lecture from Sadhguru. I don't know if you've ever listened to him, but I like it because he's a Hindu guru. So you don't expect him to be so direct, but he'll say, "That's bullshit. Yes, yes or no." But that is a thing for him. He's like, no matter what anybody says to me, no matter what anybody does to me, no matter what anybody does around me, this is me. This is who I am. And I'm not giving anybody the power to change that, to affect that, to change how I feel, to control my feelings. Because that's what you're doing when you let something someone else does affect how you, if you become so reactive to it. I try to be that way in my life. I really do. It's not easy, but it's a consistency that once you're maintaining it, it's calming. You feel there's just a calmness about it, because I don't feel like I have to react either.
You're being your authentic self, right? And then it's kind of like, maybe you can talk more about it, but like, sounds like you're trying to be, you're on that your soul path, right?
Yes.
You're self-actualizing because you're being true to your authentic self. Like a lot of people, they wear a mask because they have to, you know, whether they're at home, they're with their partner, they're at work, they're at their church or whatever. You wear a different mask for different situations. When you start to get more comfortable with your actual self, then you learn how to navigate that. And maybe you don't have as many masks. You start to get to the true, like, you know, pillars of your soul.
And you definitely do.
Who you are all the time.
and the one thing that I know to be a fact, because I lived it, is that if you're not on that path, if you're not on that soul path, the universe, God, whatever you call that for you, will screw up your life royally to get you on it. And when you see people that just keep having problems, the same ones, I'll ask my youngest adopted son, I would say, how many times does the universe have to teach you this lesson before you learn it? And that's just the truth. And I think sometimes when you are always jumping in and saving somebody, and you're always jumping in and helping them solve their problems, you're really preventing their karma. You're preventing them from solving their karma so that they can move past it, because they don't ever have to. They never hit rock. Sometimes you do have to hit rock bottom to be able to accept, I can't do this anymore. I have to change, and be able to change that mindset. But as long as they're still seeking help and they're still reaching out for the quick solution to whatever they're going through, and they're not accepting accountability, and they're not doing all of the things they have to do to be better at, so that doesn't happen again. Because they don't have to, because you go in and save them every time. It's a hard thing to do, especially as a parent or even a friend. But it's important to do that. And I definitely am on my soul path, and you can tell when you are. Everything just, I had a spiritual advisor tell me one time, you'll know you're on your soul path when everything feels so right, everything's great, everything's going in the right direction, but there's a certain amount of it that's uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's always going to be.
There's a little bit that
people always want to be done. They want to be done. They think it's like, oh, well, I'm here. How come I'm not done? Right. They set a goal, make $1 million. Then they're not happy. What was the real goal? Was the goal to have $1 million or to feel independent? Or was the goal to feel satisfied? Well, the $1 million doesn't make you satisfied, because now you want $2 million or want $4 million. What is it that you were trying to do, right? So a lot of times people don't actually get to the root cause of what they really want in life.
They definitely don't. It's it, especially if you're in freeze. I mean, I sat and here I am so blissfully happy. I'm really good at what I do in marketing. And I couldn't even make that decision to start doing that again. I was really stuck in that freeze mode. And it feels like you're procrastinating or you're unsure or you're, but really you're stuck. You just got to get past that one little thing. People can also get stuck in challenge mindset. I like challenge mindset because I was an athlete. Mm-hmm. And so I respond well to that. And so I can say, okay, I'm going to get that done by April 30th. And if I give myself that challenge, then I can get that done. But you can't live in that space because it's pretty unfulfilling. And you can't just be everything in your life be a challenge. But I definitely like to be in that spot, you know, like, almost you're in entrepreneurial mindset and you've got this and you hit that. Now you've got to challenge yourself to get
milestones. Like every project manager has their milestones.
Yes.
They like what's realistic and what's not, right? So you want your you know, kind of top down management by deadline. And then there's management by like, what does it actually take to do that task? It's a nice to have if I can do it by June 1st. But if my team actually says it takes until September, right? If I keep on pushing them, right? Is the quality going to go down? Is it not really what, you know, is it the point to hit that September, you know, or, you know, the previous day, or to actually get the thing done the way it's supposed to be done, right?
And so it work.
Make sure that it actually works, right? It's like if you put out something, you hit a deadline, but it's garbage in, garbage out, what's the value of that?
Hey, we have all experienced that when our app updated, nothing worked anymore, and it had all the glitches, and you had to wait for the update to fix it.
Yeah, we hit the deadline, but they didn't put out anything that's worth using.
100%, man, 100%, because they got focused on, I got to get this done, that we got to meet this deadline, and they crunched, and boy, you got to be flexible on that. But a deadline, when we were getting ready to launch the podcast, Christina was like, do you think we need to move the launch date? And I was like, absolutely not, man. Grab hold. We're about to make this happen because we are not moving it. And sometimes you have to do that, but a lot of times you got to also see reality. If I didn't think we could actually get it done, I would have said so. But
the first time you do it, it's not going to be like the 10th time you did it or the 100th time you did it. The first episode's gonna probably not be where you want to be.
In fact, the first few episodes, we invented a drinking game, and you know, not for us, but for other people. So, if in the first few episodes, Christina says you know, or either of us says absolutely, then you have to drink. And I recommend not be driving. That's what I recommend. Don't be driving because you're not going to be sober if you actually do it. I mean, if you can't laugh at yourselves, and we are complete rookies, right? But it was super fun. But when you listen back.
That is a really positive thing because like, there's a lot of people. I've talked to one guy. He's wanted to do a podcast for 5 years, still hasn't done it. Come up with all kinds of excuses like don't have the mixer, don't have the service, don't have this, don't have that, not ready, we're not ready, not ready. Well, you know, since then, how many other podcasts have been created and people have to take that first shot, right? And of course, it's like that first episode is never going to be like the optimum, like, but you have to take that shot. Like, you know, right. When you're first learning how to do a 3-point shot, you probably didn't hit it, right? You probably didn't. 10,000 or 1,000 shots to be muscle memory. So you get it in. So like yes. You guys need that first shot. Of course you might not hit it, but like, don't stress about not hitting it. Just show up and do it.
Learn from it. Enjoy it. The hardest thing for my personal growth has been dealing with the parts of myself that I don't like. And that I think other people don't like. And that I think I can change. I don't like that. I think I can, I've got to find a way to work through that so I don't do that anymore. I don't. And, you know, none of those things for me were actually things that I could change. And I don't, I'm such a better person that I'm able to accept. And I definitely have a long ways to go, but being able to accept those parts of myself as parts of who I am, and they serve an essential function, like anger. Think about how much change wouldn't happen if we didn't have anger. You got to get pissed off to change stuff sometimes. So anger is a really important thing for us to have, but is it appropriate to have it when somebody says something on Facebook, or is it, it's like going into fight or flight. It's so important that we have that for our survival, but it's not really appropriate if somebody criticizes you to go into fight or flight, you know, and be frozen and not be able to communicate and function.
Rage,
and
rage. Like, you do the road rage and you take it to the nth level. Like how you get, like, anger is a valid human emotion. There's all kinds of emotions. The problem, I think, a lot of people, they get to like this kind of stoicism where they believe I shouldn't show any emotions. I should be like Spock on Star Trek and kind of push it down to the degree that it blows up. Like even on Star Trek, there was one episode where it kind of blew up.
Right? Yes.
Always the repression is supposed to be valid. That's who he is. And in one episode, it's like it all came out and he just unraveled. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, so like even the guy who's supposed to be the archetype of that had a problem.
Yes. And I would say, you know, you can't, my adopted son, every day I'd ask him how he was. I'm fine. Finally, I was like, okay, no one is fine every day. I've been fine like 4 days this month. I said, it's okay to not be fine. And what you're doing is every little emotion that you're supposed to be feeling, you're putting it in that sack and you're carrying it, and pretty soon it's like Santa and it's big and it's just stuffed all the way full, and then it blows up and explodes on people that don't deserve it, and all of that emotion comes out uncontrollable because it's not sustainable. You can't just keep filling that bag up. It doesn't expand forever. It eventually is going to bust. And so dealing with, and frankly, we don't raise our boys to deal with emotions. We raise them to be a man and stuff it up. It stuff them down and that's a topic for another day. They grow up and they lose their job or their significant other doesn't want them anymore, and they lash out physically because that's what the male gender does. I raised three boys and two girls, and they're all great human beings, and boys react to things physically. They just do. And when you're an adult and you do that and you don't have control, then typically it's violent. And it's a big problem that we have in America right now, is that inability to regulate our emotions and it exploding out and making us unable to even compromise or accept somebody else's point of view.
Yeah, that's always been, you know, being an artist, I've been more in the mindset of expansiveness and also being in touch, like being in touch with all kinds of like aspects of yourself. So there's a lot of self-analysis when you're in the artistic world, because a lot of times you take like the good and the bad and the painful, and you turn it into work, right? But if you've been taught to kind of, not in an artistic method, you've been taught to kind of just take that anger and lash out, but you've not been taught to take it and turn it into a painting, or turn it into a song, to turn it into a book, turn it into a poem. Learn how to go through your pain, accept it, and turn it into something beautiful, right? Then you
use it for something good and hopefully profitable. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you learn how to take it and not get triggered by it, and then it's a kind of art therapy, and a lot of artists are like get involved with psychologists and other people to help people, you know, who think they can't even paint or they can't do anything. Like every human being can be creative, whether or not you're going to be Mozart or you're going to be Hemingway or you're going to be Picasso. That's maybe not the goal. The goal is that you can use it to help your your mental state and help your soul.
And find your true path, right? By relaxing and accepting yourself and spending time alone. So important to just shut up, spend some time alone, no music, in the quiet, and let the thoughts come. Just let them come. And eventually, even if you just do it 5 minutes a day, just sitting in the quiet, not just sitting. It's amazing how just doing that gives you so much control over your emotions. I've been meditating for almost 15 years, and it takes a lot to freak me out and get me all wound up. It really does. You got to really be close to me to push those buttons, because it's just great. It's not like you can be stressed out and go meditate, because that's impossible. Yeah. It's preventative. It's so you meditate, and then when something happens, you don't freak out, because and there's nothing intentional that you do to make that happen. It just happens because you did it. You just become much more centered with yourself, and those fears aren't there. You get all the noise.
Cause there's so much noise in the world. If you can take that walk, or you can kind of just get to a quiet place and not have your phone and your iPad and everything buzzing with you, like if you can just get to a moment of quiet, and whether you breathing exercise, but get to a place where you're not just fret with worry, fret with anxiousness, try to kind of center yourself. And somebody, that's foo-foo. Well, you kind of get past that it's foo-foo. You got, like, it's like, if you don't get past where it's foo-foo, then you're not going to really get on that.
Right. And you don't, it's not like you have to meditate and think and listen and breathe. Seriously, if you just sit some time by yourself in the quiet without screens, without something distracting you, and you're alone with your own thoughts, which for a lot of people is terrifying. It's amazing how good that is for you. Just sit there.
That's a good practice.
It really is. And if you did nothing else and you just started doing that 5 minutes every day, I promise in a month, you'll feel a difference. In just a month. It's amazing. It really is. There's things that used to just push my buttons. And when it happens, I'm like,
and you kind of shake it off. You like a lot of animals, like they get chased by the wolf, and then you see them kind of shake it off. We've kind of lost the ability to shake off our tension and our kind of, adrenal response. And there's tools like breathing exercises and meditation, mm-hmm. and other things that you can do. But we've already hit our mark. It always happens faster than we ever anticipate.
Right.
But we didn't talk about, like, if people go to your deals with heels, .com, what do they find there? Like if they click on that.
That's our website for the podcast. It has Christina and I's bios on it. It has links to all the episodes. We're available on all platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, all of those. And you can link to YouTube from there. And we don't have anything for season 2 yet. We're deep into planning. We start recording May 6th and it premieres May 15th. But we have lots of big plans, lots of more self-care involved, and we're going out and doing some live stuff out in the community. So it's going to be a fun season. We're excited for it.
That's awesome. We would love to promote fellow podcasters, because we've been in this since 2016, and we find podcasting is a really good community of people getting their voice out there. And we love to having you on the show today, get your voice out there and to help celebrate your podcast and what you're doing with the work you do.
And I had the best time
for being a guest.
I had the best time. I really did. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it. We would love to have you, but we only have women as guests on our podcast. I really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much. And this will be published. We were on YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook Live, but this will be on all the podcast platforms where you can listen to or watch a podcast by tomorrow. And I want to thank you again for being on the show, and have a great night.
You too.